From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President-elect Donald Trump promised a lot of things on the campaign trail, but in the end, it seemed to boil down to this.
We're going to Washington, D.C. to drain the swamp.
To drain it, he said, of money influence, of lobbyist sway and corruption. Now, the transition to a Trump administration has begun. How's it look? What gets drained in Washington, D.C.? This hour on Point, Draining the Swamp, Donald Trump's big promise to clean up Washington. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you with the next president on draining the swamp? What did that, what does that mean to you, and do you see it happening, shaping up here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in the hour, we will look specifically at the president-elect's highly controversial new chief White House strategist and senior counselor, Stephen Bannon. But first, drain the swamp. Here was Donald Trump in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the wee hours before Election Day voting began, promising an ebullient crowd that he would deal with the special interests in Washington.
My contract with the American voter begins with a plan to end government corruption and to take our country back from the special interests. I want the entire corrupt Washington establishment to hear our words, when we say, you know what we're going to say? We're going to win today, and we're going to Washington, D.C. to drain the swamp.
With us now from Washington is Major Garrett, CBS News chief White House correspondent. He covered the Trump campaign, is now covering the Trump transition. Major Garrett, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here as always.
Tom, great to be with you.
What is shaping up in the transition team? How much is new? How much is old? How much is outsider? How much is insider? How much is lobbyist? How much is independent?
Well, Tom, let me get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. As a prelude to that answer, let me say that I spent 16 months on the campaign trail. I attended probably 75 or 80 Trump rallies.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And in those encounters with Trump supporters, I can tell you this topic is very important to them. Whatever Donald Trump does or doesn't do, this issue, I wouldn't say is necessarily central to every Trump supporter I met, and I probably interviewed more than 100, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very high on their list of why A, they initially supported Trump, and why they were resilient in their support of Trump throughout all of his many difficulties, some of them external, some of them internal.
And what do you think the expectation or desire was that you felt on the campaign trail before we even got to Election Day and transition time?
The expectation was that if Donald Trump was elected president, everyone in Washington, now comfortable, would suddenly be scared, that there would be this outside force who knew the game, knew the donation game, had been seduced by both parties for donations, had given to both parties, and knew the connection between money, influence, and result. And they wanted someone so thoroughly educated on that process that they could, if not eradicate it, change it fundamentally. And they also believed, and this is something that came up in almost every single conversation I had, Tom. It's why it's important, and I bring it up before we get into some of the specifics.
Yep.
Trump supporters believe because of his wealth, he could not be bought. I can't tell you how many times among the first things people would say in a praiseworthy way about Trump is he can't be bought. The system can't get to him. He's bigger than it. He's larger than it.
Yep.
And so this expectation is very real. And I'm one of the few reporters that you'll ever talk to who covered the Obama campaign almost from the beginning to its culmination.
That's right.
And now the Trump campaign from almost its beginning to its culmination. So I met voters in both instances craving change, having a degree of expectation, and a hope that Washington, as they knew it and were dissatisfied with it, would be changed. I would say, compared to the conversations I had with Obama supporters and Trump supporters, the Trump supporters are even more fixated on this idea of breaking the moneyed grip and the relationship they perceive between money and policy and outcomes in the nation's capital. That's why I think this is a big, big topic.
It's a big deal. And he talked about it from the very beginning. I want to go back to one of those early primary debates. Very first one. This was August 2015, more than a year ago now. And here he is saying, you know, he knew how the political system is broken. The Fox moderator Bret Baier quoted him as having said, when you give, they do whatever the hell you want them to do, talking about the influence of money in politics. And Bret Baier asked him to respond to that quote of from himself. And respond he did with the kind of candor that won Donald Trump a lot of votes.
I will tell you that our system is broken. I give to many people. Before this, before 2 months ago, I was a businessman. I give to everybody. When they call, I give. And you know what? When I need something from them, 2 years later, 3 years later, I call them. They are there for me.
So what
and that's
get?
A broken system.
All right. Here we are. It's transition time now, Major. You covered that campaign. You've described what voters, Trump supporters, wanted. What is shaping up here?
What's shaping up is something they might find very disappointing. Borderline alarming. When Donald Trump sat down for his first interview with Leslie Stahl, my colleague at 60 Minutes, and she asked about the lobbyists who are populating the Trump transition team, he said, well, where else am I going to go? What else can I do? You need the people with the skills. You need the people with the know-how. Okay, that is one answer. It's actually a storied and historical answer many outsiders running against Washington have given once they encounter the realities of having won and need to build a transition. But there's something else fundamental at work here. When you look at many of the policy positions Donald Trump developed over the course of the campaign, many were simply poured into his campaign by either groups that are think tanks with connections to lobbyists, or they are reflections of industry-specific requests for legislation long denied under the Obama administration. So you have two tracks here that Trump supporters may find less than satisfactory when it comes to draining the swamp. First of all, many of the top people on all the various transition teams Trump has for the various agencies have lobbyist connections, many to industries that would be regulated or would like to be out from under regulations under the Obama administration through those various cabinet agencies. So that's a reality. And then you have this policy foundation beneath Trump that in many ways reflects the desires of industry, particularly in the energy field, especially in energy. There's almost nothing that the oil and gas industry would like that Donald Trump has not said he is in favor of. And the people who are being lined up for consideration as top cabinet officials and assistant secretaries at the Interior Department and the Energy Department are from those industries.
Is this
they haven't gotten the appointments yet, but they're in the pipeline.
Is this because they're showering money somewhere on Donald Trump or I don't know what, or because he simply agrees with what these industries want as policy?
I think he agrees with it, more or less. And he said on the campaign trail, he could not have been more emphatic about this relationship to energy. We're going to open up everything that's in America. We're going to expand and explore everywhere. I don't think global warming's a real thing. I'm going to be in favor of fossil fuels. I'm in favor of clean coal. There are those who would say that's a misnomer, but whatever. Trump used it all the time. Natural gas, drill wherever you can, fracking wherever you can find it. If it was an explorable and exploitable natural resource in America, continental shelf, where it hasn't been drilling in any expanded way since the 60s, open that up. He's all in favor of. More aggressive than I would say the George W. Bush presidency, which many on the left considered as aggressive as could be possibly imagined. Trump is way beyond that when it comes to energy and natural resources and exploration and some would call exploitation.
And it's not just energy, of course. He's got an agriculture food company guy, lobbyist in on the ag team of transition. He's got a transportation industry guy in on transportation infrastructure.
Right, with ties to the asphalt industry.
I mean, that's what makes roads, I guess.
Sure.
You're with CBS. Here was Leslie Stahl on CBS 60 Minutes talking on Sunday with President-elect Trump, sort of jockeying here for whether he is promising the country outsiders but actually appointing Washington insiders.
Lobbyists and special interests.
And you want to get rid of all of that?
I don't like it, no.
You don't like it? But your own transition team is filled with lobbyists.
It's the only people you have down there.
You have lobbyists from Verizon. You have lobbyists from the oil gas industry.
Sure.
You have food lobbyists.
Everybody's a lobbyist down there. That's what they are. They're lobbyists, they're special
interests.
On
your own transition team.
We're trying to clean up Washington. Look.
How can you clean
everything? Everything down there. There are no people. They're all people that work. That's the problem with the system. The system.
It's the system. We're trying to clean it up, but it's the system. You're watching, Major. You know the players here. Does this ring true? Does he have options he's not tapping? And if this is who he's tapping, then what does drain the swamp mean?
Drain the swamp right now was a catchy campaign phrase. And Trump was also honest about this on the campaign trail. I heard him say it many, many times. I don't even like the phrase, but you guys liked it. So when you guys liked it and started screaming it back to me, I kind of started to like it. It was something that was evocative. It created a tremendous emotional response with his crowd, but he never defined what it meant. I mean, Trump has said that he's in favor of term limits. We can have an academic and a lengthy academic argument as to whether or not term limits would actually make lawmakers more or less powerful in relationship to entrenched lobbyists. At the state level, the experience has been exactly the opposite. The governing class is no longer legislators at the state level with term limits. It's the permanent lobbyist
class.
But
Major, I would say he did define it. Right from that first debate, he said the money politics link is corrupt.
Is real, right.
Is real,
so
it's corrupt, I've done voters, it, it's too much.
What he tells voters is, I'm bigger than that money because nobody can bring that money to me and nobody can bedazzle me with money.
But wasn't it more than that? Wasn't the suggestion, I'm going to break that link? I'm going to break that corruptive, the corrupting grip on Washington?
There is nothing he's put forward as far as breaking the money link in terms of contributions or transparency of contributions or anything like that at all in this campaign. He never did. He said he would ban White House or administration officials from lobbying for the next 5 years. He would seek the same ban on members of Congress. You can't lobby for 5 years and have a lifetime ban on lobbying if you're in the administration for the rest of your life. If you served in a White House, you could never
lobby on
behalf of a foreign government. Well, he has to present that to Congress. Congress would have to ratify all that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Donald Trump's promise to drain the swamp in Washington, what that meant on the campaign trail, what we're seeing now, what may be to come. Major Garrett is with us, chief White House correspondent for CBS News, joins us from Washington, covered the Trump campaign, is now covering the transition, author of The Enduring Revolution, joins us from Washington. You can join us as well. What did you think Drain the Swamp meant? What do you see in the Trump transition so far? It's early days, we know, but people are being named. They're being appointed to oversee what happens here. Can he be hiring lobbyists and still deliver on his Drain the Swamp promise? And with appointments like Steve Bannon, is Trump creating a new kind of swamp of racism, of white nationalism? Is that a different issue, or are these related? Here was Donald Trump in Miami a week before Election Day. That promise again to clean up Washington, leading the crowd in his signature chant.
When we win on November 8th, we are going to Washington, D.C., and we are going to drain the swamp. Going to drain the swamp.
Okay, on Sunday, Kellyanne Conway, senior advisor, former campaign manager to President-elect Trump, talked with Fox News anchor Chris Wallace about Trump's transition to the presidency. Voters have been begging for an outsider for 30 years, she said, and now they've finally gotten their wish.
Finally, the voters got what they wanted, what they've been begging for 30 years, which is give us the opportunity, give us a person who actually represents the outsider, non-Washington, business experience type of profile, somebody who goes to Washington owing nobody anything.
And here was Donald Trump on Sunday, 60 Minutes, with Major Garrett's colleague Leslie Stahl saying he'll clean up Washington.
We're having restrictions on foreign money coming in. We're going to put on term limits, which a lot of people aren't happy about, but we're putting on term limits. We're doing a lot of things to clean up the system. But everybody that works for government, they then leave government and they become a lobbyist, essentially. I mean, the whole place is one big lobbyist.
Yeah, you're basically saying you have to rely on them, even though you want to get rid of them.
I'm saying that they know the system right now, but we're going to phase that out. You have to phase it out.
You have to phase it out. Sort of a suggestion there of give me time. I'm working on it. Trust me. I'm on it. Major Garrett, stand by in Washington, if you would. With us right now, a couple of very keyed in observers of what's going on. John Pudner joins us from Auburn, Alabama, conservative political consultant. He's executive director of Take Back Our Republic. It's a nonprofit devoted to building conservative support for reducing the influence of money in politics. John Pudner, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And from Washington, Fred Wertheimer joins us, founder and president of Democracy 21, nonprofit pushes for reform in Washington, has worked over 4 decades to limit money in politics, probably a little more liberal than John Pudner. Fred Wertheimer, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
All right. John Pudner, this has been your cause, and now here's President-elect Trump
And what do you see in the first signs out of Washington? Do you have hope that he's going to deliver on the drain the swamp promise, sir?
I believe he is, and I think you mentioned Steve Bannon. I don't see how anyone can believe that President Trump is not serious about reform when Steve Bannon's one of his top two appointments. I mean, certainly no one has been a stronger voice out there on reform. I think you couple that with the plan he laid out for stopping the revolving door, stopping these lobbyists from coming in, going back out, and then lobbying the administration and Congress. I think that's a serious start, coupled with trying to stop foreign money influence. So I'm optimistic. It certainly takes time. It's not going to be solved immediately, but I think he's going to go in the right direction.
What's the Steve Bannon drain the swamp philosophy, though? I mean, there's so much controversy right now about his role at Breitbart News, where they were championing white nationalism and anti-Semitism, racism and misogyny, the rest. But how does drain the swamp intersect with that, Mr. Putner?
Well, first, the attacks on Bannon are just an extension of the 18 months of attacks on Trump as a racist and sexist. And then the end result, I mean, Trump won white women 53-43 after hearing this. You know, in Florida, Hillary won only 84% of the black vote, 62% Latino vote. Nationwide, only 71% of the Jewish vote. I mean, these attacks on Bannon are just an extension of the attacks on Trump. He's won now, so they're moving on. But if you look at Bannon's history at Breitbart, certainly the case for reform, no one has been stronger on the influence of hedge funds. I mean, that was one of the first things Breitbart hit in this campaign, is how come Hillary has $120 million in hedge fund contributions and Trump has $19,000? You know, clearly the people who know where they want things to go and like this political industrial complex were very comfortable with that system continuing and very uncomfortable with Trump, and I think for reason.
Then what do you make of the lobbyists who have been brought in to oversee the transition for key sectors of the government, overseeing key sectors of society? Does that work?
Well, yes. I think the key word there is transition, and I think you heard that even in the comments you were playing from President-elect Trump, that you have to transition. That is the system now. You do have to have some people with expertise, which is why I think Reince Priebus is a nice balance to Bannon going in. You do need someone who has closer working, certainly VP Pence, et cetera. But this is a transition. And remember now, any lobbyist who's coming into the administration, they're fighting for rules to say, okay, you're going to come in, you're going to help us clean this up. But now when you go back out for 5 years, if Trump is successful in his agenda,
yep,
you're not going to be able to come back and lobby and now get taxpayer money into your new pet peeve cause just because you spent a few years in the White House with me. So I think that's all positive.
But John Putner, these lobbyists lobbied for industries. They're surely not going to set up and Donald Trump said the industries are buying influence. People are buying influence. And the lobbyists are not going to set up a system or a new structure that disadvantages the people whose interests they have explicitly represented, are they?
Well, the concern is a lobbyist lobbying to pick winners and losers.
Yeah.
Those are your big concerns.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lobbyist, if this five-year moratorium shutting down this revolving door that President-elect Trump has advocated is successful, then these lobbyists, they can come in and help clean up the system. They can no longer, if they're going to go in the administration, now, beyond transition, they can no longer then go back out, be hired to then make sure their government contractor client or whoever else is getting billions and billions of dollars in taxpayer money. That's what we're concerned about.
But he's hiring lobbyists already coming in from the get-go. They don't have to wait for a five-year turnaround. It's not even day one, and he's brought them in.
Well, of course, and that's the transition. But my point is, if people come in and serve a couple years in administration, and then they go out and lobby and start trying to tell the government, leverage that experience in the White House to get taxpayer money to their clients, that's where we have the big problem. So you've got to look at the back end of this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, no one thinks that the system has been solved a few days into a transition period. We're looking at where do these lobbyists go after. And I think if you can get this five-year, shut down the revolving door and get down those five-year moratoriums, that's where we're going to have success.
Fred Wertheimer, what do you see shaping up here from Democracy 21?
Well, let me make a few points. First of all, on this lobbyist restrictions, if President-elect Trump is serious about lobbyists, he can show it in a simple way. He ought to announce now that he's going to extend President Obama's ethics executive order, which prohibits lobbyists from going to work in agencies that they have been lobbying for an extended period. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't do that, if he's not willing to stop lobbyists from going in and immediately carrying out the work that they've been paid to do, then he's not serious about the lobbyist stuff.
But he's already put them up to run these, to run the transition these agencies.
I'm saying this is a question of who goes into the government.
Okay.
I'm not talking about the transition. Mm-hmm. I'm basically saying, okay, if you're serious about lobbyists, don't hire lobbyists to work in the agencies that they've been trying to influence for years. Number two, it was very ironic that he talked about restricting foreign money from coming into the country, because foreign money is prohibited from being given to any campaign in the country. It's already prohibited. And yet, when we found and others found that President-elect Trump's campaign was soliciting contributions from foreign individuals all over the world, we could not get them to stop. We filed an FEC complaint. We filed a complaint in the Justice Department, and they just wouldn't stop raising money illegally from foreign interests. But let me go to the larger point.
Okay.
President-elect Trump defined what draining the swamp was. It's the corrupt money that is influencing the system and rigging the system against the people, most of the people who voted for him. Now, we and other groups tried to get him throughout the campaign. We tried to get all the candidates to tell us what they would do about the money situation. And President Trump never did make any recommendations on fixing this system in any significant way. So I'll give you an example of what the swamp really means. President-elect Trump said he would close down the so-called carried interest loophole, which gives billions of dollars to hedge fund managers. Mm. He also happened to have hedge fund managers as some of his biggest financial backers. And they certainly have been giving money forever to Congress. So let's see what happens to the carried interest loophole and President-elect Trump's commitment to get rid of it when that loophole goes into the swamp, because I am quite certain it's not coming out. The loophole is not going to be shut down by this president, by this Congress, and that's just one example. We are about to have a much larger swamp in which political money is going to play an even larger interest, and President-elect Trump is not willing to do anything about it.
But,
so when he says, let's drain the swamp, he knew what he was communicating to potential voters, but he also knew he wasn't going to do anything about the money problem in Washington.
But Major Garrett, he was so explicit about it. I mean, here he was in Iowa in January, pretty critical time in the campaign process, and he was talking to supporters there about how he personally got favors in return for political contributions, wanted to bring an end to that.
I've given to Democrats. I've given to Hillary. I've given to everybody because that was my job. I got to give to them because when I want something, I get it. When I call, they kiss my... Okay, it's true. They kiss my...
When I call, they kiss my... You heard the beep right there. Major, that seems like the foundation of a commitment to changing that.
Sure, and a knowledge of how the system works from the perspective of somebody who was a giver, not a taker. And as I refer back to my opening comments, so many Trump supporters from the get-go found that refreshing. Hey, we're going to vote for a giver, not a taker. We're sick and tired of being lied to by the takers. So we'll get some fresh honesty and perspective and vulgarity from a giver.
But did they also presume that he would change that system so that other billionaires couldn't go in and buy that ass-kissing? Here's something,
Tom, that I've noticed in my long career in Washington, and perhaps Fred and John have their own perspectives on this.
Okay.
Special interests and the role of lobbyists and the pseudo-corrupt nature of Washington almost entirely is defined by results you find displeasing, ideologically or politically. You're not necessarily upset about lobbyists or special interests who work in tandem with you to create a policy you think is beneficial for the country or aligns with your ideological perspective. Most special interests, as defined by politicians I've seen talk about them, are odious because they succeed in frustrating or getting a part of something you don't agree with. And you see this in almost every administration, and you're seeing it now with the Trump transition. People who are supportive of the overall goals, whether it's in food policy or energy exploration or anything else, tax policy, carried interest, as Fred just mentioned, they're aligned, so they're not bad. They're not odious special interests anymore. They're part of the team.
Well, I mean,
and
Kelly,
as long as that alignment,
John Putner, you want to take back our republic, you say. You want to get the influence of money out of politics. Here's the complaint. It just depends what team is in, and they're happy to have that money.
Well, I think what we want to do is break the addiction to politics. You know, we're putting out an open source People's Democracy playbook, which will give candidates an idea of how they win the races, like Dave Brat did. That was one of my last campaigns I worked on against Eric Cantor. How do you overcome $5 million with a couple hundred thousand? There are ways to do it. So the end result isn't just get all the money out of politics. I mean, that's unrealistic, but it's just giving alternate funding so that these candidates, when they come in, aren't so dependent on these checks, that there aren't alternate ways to fund efforts. And that's where the small dollar contributions are a very good thing that's developed. President Obama did it on the Democrat side. Trump did it this year, $100 million in small digital contributions at the end.
So you don't care if they break the money politics link, if we get Citizens United turned around, that doesn't matter to you, John Putner?
Well, I just think so much effort is being spent on a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. I think that's Don Quixote stuff. God bless any group trying to make a reform effort, but I think there's so many things we can do. We need disclosure. We need to encourage small donors, and we're planning on promoting a bill that would bring back the old Reagan-era tax credit to include more small donors. So just so many other things you can do that I think are realistic. I mean, we got 83 co-sponsors on our bill to stop people from sneaking foreign dollars in through unverified credit cards.
How do you feel about about Donald Trump's family, his children, being in charge of his multi-billion-dollar business enterprises while they're also on the transition executive committee and presumably will be, you know, they're intimate with their father? Is that all right?
Oh, I think that's something that certainly has to be scrutinized, and I'm not an ethics expert in that. And certainly, I think the question's even bigger when you get beyond transition. There's a certain threshold for transition. But, no, I think those should be looked at very closely. I won't pretend to be an expert there, but certainly I think that's something anyone should monitor and see what the connections are here.
But he's saying so far that's how it's going to be. Yes, Fred, yes.
I understand what Major was saying, but I think he misses something.
Okay.
There have always been special interests in this country, and there always will be. There have always been lobbyists, and there always will be. The objection here is for the ability of special interests and lobbyists to use political money to corrupt government decisions.
Yep.
Now, that was the claim that Donald Trump said he could do, and he said he was going to take it on. So this is not a fight about eliminating special interests or eliminating lobbyists. This is about a fight about corrupting government decisions at the expense of the American people, including most of the American people who voted for Donald Trump.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Blue Apron, providing pre-portioned, fresh ingredients with easy recipes delivered to your door. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Donald Trump's promise to drain the swamp in Washington. CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Major Garrett is with us. Fred Wertheimer from Democracy 21. John Putner from Take Back Our Republic from Auburn, Alabama with us today. On Sunday, Kellyanne Conway, former campaign manager, now senior advisor to the president-elect, talked with Fox News anchor Chris Wallace
Wallace wondered why the Trump team is putting lobbyists in transition leadership positions in agencies that will oversee the industries those lobbyists have represented. He asked how they can be expected to drain their own swamp. Here was Conway's response.
Look, these are people who are talented and have done this before. You can't just appoint novices. You have to have people who know what they're doing. But at the same time, moving forward, this is an administration that's going to run very differently than typical Washington.
We'll see. People who know what they're doing. I guess Mike in Albany, New York. Thanks for calling, Mike. You're on the air. What do you see?
Hey, Tom. You know, I think when it comes to Wall Street and the economy, Trump's hypocrisy is off the charts, right? He had his own set of hedge fund and private equity billionaires that gave big money to him. His national political director is being talked about as the Treasury Secretary. The guys that benefit from the carried interest loophole, the guys that placed bets on Wall Street and funded Trump, are poised to make big profits privatizing health care.
Do you think that's going to upset Trump supporters, Mike?
I think it will. I think he put the swamp monsters in charge of the government. And I think it's the closest to the biggest bait and switch as we've ever seen in American political history. And regular people are going to get hurt by these policies.
John Putner, what do you say? That people were expecting something here, a big divorce from that kind of influence.
Again, I'll just quote the figures. We can talk about 80 yep. some hedge fund people involved in each side, but as of several months ago, $120 million from hedge fund sources to Hillary Clinton, $19,000 to Donald Trump. Now, I'm sure that may be equaled somewhat, but if the premise is that clearly the hedge fund people were behind Trump, so he can't be serious, I think that just falters when you look at basic figures and giving and who was giving to whom.
Major Garrett, there is a difference in the numbers there. Does that free Donald Trump to act here?
It frees him to act if he wants to be free to act. And it also frees him from the sense that whatever actions he takes, ipso facto are influenced by money. And that decoupling is one of the things that Trump supporters found enticing about a Trump candidacy from the very beginning. What he did, they assume, or what he ever does, if he became president, they assumed would be done either on the merits or because of his own gut instincts or what he promised them on the campaign trail, not because he was necessarily beholden to them, even before he started his campaign or if his campaign got in a rough patch and he needed more money. That was the essential assumption underlying their faith in Trump, that he would bring something different to the system by virtue of his perspective, which is decoupled from money.
Maybe that still stands. Maybe on the merits.
Sure.
He wants
these
industries
to drive. I think that will give him a resilience in these questions that will hold him in good stead for a while, because I think he will receive from his supporters, at least initially, the benefit of the doubt.
So if he has industry lobbyists running the government agencies that oversee those industries, that's not a problem for Trump backers, Major?
They will, I think, as John has indicated, wait and see what happens. And I think they're willing to give Trump the space to create a transition and get himself going and create a government that he wants to have, and then they'll wait and see. And I agree with Fred's point entirely that lobbyists have always been there. They're constitutionally protected. I actually wonder if you can ban someone for 5 years for being a lobbyist. There might be constitutional issues about that, since it is a protected aspect of the First Amendment to petition your government. Setting that aside, I understand what Fred's driving at. But my point, I think, is still valid. I've watched politicians run against the system, come and win in the system, and then say, well, I only met the people who were frustrating what I wanted to do. I got voted in. I have a mandate. And if people can help me press that mandate forward and they happen to be lobbyists, too bad. That's what I need. You're already beginning to hear that from Trump. So I think the lobbyist thing reinforces policy outcomes, ideology. That's what people like. What they don't like is when lobbyists frustrate what they want to do or get something else out of the system that they oppose.
Fred, is there a bait and switch here or just delivering on the whole package of promises?
Look, there was a separation from campaign rhetoric and proposed policy when it comes to money influencing. Even if Trump is free, and we'll just have to wait and see if that's true, the Congress isn't free. I mean, the Congress is consumed with special interest influence money. And hedge fund managers have blocked the carried interest reform for years and years. Now, the biggest point, I think, from this draining the swamp rhetoric is the fact that to date, President Trump, President-elect Trump, is not prepared or interested in challenging in any significant way this system that corrupts our decisions in Washington, that rigs the system, one of President-elect Trump's favorite words. He has given no indication that he is willing to fight to change this system. He has made no proposals. And if he doesn't, this system is going to continue corrupting our democracy, and the swamp is going to get bigger and deeper in the years ahead, even if President-elect Trump was freed from money influence, and we'll just have to wait and see on that.
I mean, John Putner, maybe President Trump, President-elect Trump is saying, look, I won't be influenced by money, but effectively it doesn't matter because he wants just what the big corporations want anyway. Maybe that's what he wants is policy.
Well, fair enough, but I don't think that's the plan he's laid out. And I go back to Bannon being one of the two. I think if you're just not trying to shake the apple cart, you don't have Bannon as one of your two people. Certainly, someone who's been antagonistic, and if Red makes a point, certainly with some of the members of Congress. Well, what if they are influenced? Well, you certainly have a critic of a lot of people in Congress, in Bannon. So
what's he going to shake? Yeah. What's he going to most shake, Steve Bannon, as chief strategist?
Well, I think Bannon is concerned with the transactional giving we see, not only from the super wealthy, but from special interest groups, from taxpayer-funded lobbyists who go back and try to get more taxpayer money back to whether it's their agency, their department, whatever. I think that whole cycle, that political industrial complex, he'll be in there looking for ways to break that up, to stop the transactional nature of giving. I'm not so concerned on ideological giving. If a conservative billionaire and liberal billionaire want to cancel each other off just for ideologically, I'm not as concerned about that money. I'm worried about the money that is tied to spending and where campaign contributions are given in return for taxpayer money going back to those entities. That's what we've got to break.
Major, just a few seconds here. Do you see that headed toward a change, transactional giving?
Probably not. And one thing that we have learned academically, when there's one party rule in Washington, whether it's Democratic or Republican, there's more spending. There'll be more spending on defense and infrastructure. There's going to be more money on the table and a lot more people chasing it.
Drain the swamp. What is it going to mean exactly? We're just beginning to focus on it, and there's a lot more to come. But this has been a good framing. We will stay on it. Major Garrett, CBS News Chief White House Correspondent. Major, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Fred Wertheimer, Democracy 21. Thank you so much, Fred.
Glad to be with you again.
And John Putner at Take Back Our Republic with us today from Auburn, Alabama. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
In a moment, the president elects deeply controversial pick Steve Bannon as chief strategist. This is On Point. Donald Trump has picked the man who arguably saved his campaign, Steve Bannon, as his chief White House strategist and senior counselor. That is an enormously influential post shaping up to be, and Steve Bannon is an enormously controversial figure. Joining me now from Washington via Skype to talk about Bannon is Rosie Gray, political reporter for BuzzFeed. She's reported on Steve Bannon and the alt-right movement that his Breitbart website has championed. Rosie Gray, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What has some people so up in arms about Steve Bannon?
Well, Steve Bannon, his background is that he has been the chairman of Breitbart News, which has sort of positioned itself as the most aggressive sort of anti-establishment right-wing website out there right now. Steve Bannon's website has been, sort of used as a platform for these sort of alt-right ideas. And it's also been used to really attack a lot of the establishment Republicans that Donald Trump is now going to have to work with. So some people are pretty up in arms about the fact that Steve Bannon is now going to be at the, you know, the highest echelon, basically, of you know, American government.
I mean, he's being attacked in very, very specific and critical terms. Here's Rabbi Jonah Dov Pesner. This is director of the Religious Action Center for Reform Judaism, saying that Mr. Bannon was responsible for the advancement of ideologies antithetical to our nation, including anti-Semitism, misogyny, racism, Islamophobia. Is there hard evidence for that, Rosie?
Hard evidence for Steve Bannon holding those views?
Yeah,
or
for promoting those, the advancement of those ideologies, as the rabbi says?
There's no question that that Breitbart, that there, those sorts of ideologies have appeared on Breitbart. If we're talking about what Steve Bannon actually believes himself, I think that that's less clear, but it's definitely true that, I mean, he's even said publicly, he told a reporter that Breitbart is a platform for the alt-right.
Define the alt-right for us. It sounds just kind of like another group or alternative, like, I don't know, homegrown cabbage, but alt-right.
The alt-right is a white nationalist, mostly online, sort of loosely connected movement that has really sort of come into its own over the past year and a half, sort of riding on Donald Trump's coattails. They have their own you know, internet culture, and there are a few sort of figureheads of the movement who have become a little bit more widely known over the past, you know, 18 months. So it's just sort of like a newer iteration of white nationalism.
White nationalism we once associated with, like, neo-Nazis. Are those the same or something different?
There is some sort of overlap between the kind of older guard of white nationalism and the newer alt-right, but the alt-right is kind of, it is sort of its own thing. I mean, they don't focus only on these white nationalist ideas, but also on the idea of sort of dismantling modern mainstream conservatism. So they have sort of like a more defined political project than, you know, the people who run Stormfront. They seek to be much more influential, like in the corridors of power, basically, at this point. And they're obviously, the candidate that they favored is now going to be in the White House. So
they want to dismantle modern mainstream conservatism and replace it with what, would you say, Rosie, from your reading?
Well, you know, from my reporting on the alt-right, like there is a certain amount of disagreement about, you know, what the end goal is. Some of them want kind of like a white ethno state. You know, some of them aren't really sure exactly what they want. I mean, most of them agree that they would like to take a very hard line on immigration. So there are a few sort of policy things that bind them together, but it's definitely, you know, it's not as if it's such a cohesive movement that they have like a manifesto.
But a white ethno state. I mean, they may have other things they want to do as well. But just, I mean, that does sound like Nazi-ish. A white ethno state, isn't that sort of one definition of what that was?
Well, like I said, like, you know, we're talking about a white nationalist movement. So yeah, I mean, there's overlap with ideologies that, you know, that are shared by neo-Nazis, for sure. But I wouldn't say that you can necessarily say that these groups are one and the same, because the alt-right does have its sort of own cast of characters and its own project.
But the guy who gave them a platform will be right down the hall from Donald Trump. What do we know about the practical policies that Steve Bannon is likely most interested in bringing into the Trump administration's thrust?
Well, Steve Bannon was sort of he's kind of the prime mover behind really encouraging Donald Trump to double down on a lot of the policies that, you know, had been seen as, you know, possibly alienating Trump from a wider pool of voters. He really encouraged Donald Trump's strategy of sort of drilling down on his base, which ended up working.
And what did that mean? What kind of policies or what kind of messages did that mean he encouraged?
Well, he never really pivoted to, to a softer stance on immigration. He stuck with his sort of trade protectionism argument up until the end, which worked out for him. It's stuff like that. I mean, if you look at public statements that Steve Bannon has made, he clearly sees the movement that he's a part of as being a kind of global populist nationalist movement, not just in America, but in sort of, you know, the wider Western world, that's kind of taking over these like increasingly atomized, globalized societies.
And if he gets his way, what would the country look like? What would the change be?
Well, I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, Steve Bannon is a mysterious figure. He does not at this point speak publicly that much, although he does sometimes. He does like radio interviews with Breitbart. He
said he's virulently anti-establishment, anti the permanent political class. He said Paul Ryan has grown in a petri dish at the Heritage Foundation, but he's also said, I mean, he's not that mysterious. You know, he's talking about fear being a good thing, anger being a good thing. Is this what's coming?
Well, I guess we're about to find out. I mean, we're in a really unprecedented situation, so.
Wow. All right. Steve Bannon will be chief strategist and senior counselor to President Trump when he takes office in January. Rosie Gray at BuzzFeed, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Be sure to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit the like button there. You'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your news feed. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Caitlin O'Keefe, Maeve Pages, Sarah Platt, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica. With help from Anita Tervantri, Alima Gikandi, Weiwa Lee. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.